Click kaya959.co.za.
This is how we do it.
To download the Point of View podcast on the air.
So the South African Child Support Grant remains the country's largest poverty alleviation tool for children, but unfortunately, it really is not enough. Now, according to the Child Gauge report produced by UCT, children are unfortunately living and are getting money that is nowhere near being sufficient to support them and to keep them going. So currently, 560 is what they're getting per child per month. And apparently, the minimum income needed for a person to meet basic nutritional requirements is 796. However, Peter Maritzburg Economic Justice and Dignity Group is actually saying, well, it's more than that. It's between 826 and 1,085 per child. And that also depends on how old the child is. I do want to speak to the Eastern Cape Provincial Manager at Human Rights Commission, Dr. Aileen Carter, who themselves, as the Human Rights Commission, have also been looking at the child support grant for a while now. Thank you very, very much, Dr. Carter, for making time for us. Good evening and welcome.
Good evening and good evening to the listeners.
So the issue of children and the child support grant is something that I think we haven't been really talking a lot about, but you've been doing a lot of work on it. And just maybe give me a sense of how the decline has been, and maybe there have been dips and maybe sometimes it goes up a little bit. But maybe if we can start at maybe looking at from 2014, what the trend has been like in how we're doing in supporting children using the grant.
So the child support grant is one of the most successful mechanisms that government has rolled out in order to alleviate poverty and to support children in need. So we recognize that, but unfortunately the child support grant has not kept up with food inflation and it does not meet the food poverty line. Now, what that basically means is that despite the wonderful gestures and the wonderful effort that has been applied, it is not enough to prevent children's deaths as a result of severe acute malnutrition. Now, indication in 2022 to the numbers of, let's just use the Eastern Cape as a sample, of children dying of severe acute malnutrition. It was 116 in the year we hosted the inquiry. We are unfortunately still looking at children dying of hunger in 2025. Now, last year alone in the Eastern Cape, there was 107 children dying of severe acute malnutrition. And in the country, it was 573 children dying of what we deem as preventable. The numbers currently are looking dire as well, which has to move us to ask whether the child support grant and other mechanisms are in fact assisting us to prevent and address these issues.
And now, apart from the fact that, you know, those who are accessing the grant in itself, it's very low and it's not keeping up with food inflation, there's also a slow uptake on the grant. And obviously, you're citing various things like, you know, documentation, birth certificates, ID books of the parents and so on. Just how serious is that?
So since 2021, there has been a consistent decline in the uptake of, I think it's below the age of 1-year-olds, which means this is not an easy process to undergo for young mothers, perhaps for mothers with newborns. And we have been informed, and that's the questions we even posed to National Treasury today, that that process is even being, increasingly arduous because of what SASSA is undertaking to verify these child support grant recipients. So what we're talking about, yes, we can talk about numbers and we can put these when we speak about National Treasury and the mechanisms applied. But at the end of the day, these are children. These are children with names. These are young little faces whose parents have to go up and down to the Department of Labor, verify UIF, verify previous employment, take taxis and public transport for them to access this very little amount in order to assist their children, not being hungry. And we have to ask ourselves, Are we addressing this as a wholesale approach? Are we using human rights language? And do we actually put the faces to these numbers that we so flippantly throw to say, you know, we have to look at the efficiencies and the statistics and the anecdotal evidence? Or are we really concerned with the children at the end of the day when we speak about the Bill of Rights and what we have promised them under Section 27 and 28 of the Constitution?
Just for my benefit, Dr. Carter, for those who want to go through some of the reports that are in front of us, give me the distinction between below the poverty line and below the upper bound poverty line, what the distinction is.
So it is a technical differentiation that the Department of Finance uses to determine whether there would be a sufficiency of an amount that they would release for this purpose. Now, ours, I mean, it is actually to take a step back, to ask and to acknowledge that technicality for us when we speak about numbers is very important, yes, because we are doing auditing, we need to account for the public purse. But ours as the Human Rights Commission is to ask to quickly and very intrinsically reflect on what is the promise of Section 28 of the Constitution. Mm. Now, Section 28 of the Constitution, number one, says children have a right to basic nutrition. Section 28 also says the right at the best interest of the child should be a paramount consideration in addressing issues relating to children. So what are we speaking about? Are we speaking about very technical language so that we can see, which almost sounds like to exclude as many recipients as possible because we are unpacking technical food bound poverty lines, we are at the upper bound, lower bound, or are we going back to the basics and speaking about the rights of children? And that, I think, is what the Commission is calling for, a human rights-based approach where children have access to what has been promised to them in the Constitution.
Dr. Carter, I just want you, and I know this is not part of the studies that have been conducted, but this is a recent development where we are getting a lot of complaints from SASSA grant recipients, either pensioners and so on, who, again, through this SASSA mechanism of verification, have been on the back foot where, you know, they're now querying the fact that they're not getting any money because perhaps the person either, you know, sold their car, for instance, and had a once-off payment and suddenly they're struck off. And what that has meant in supplementing the money that the children get or some who don't get, and what that actually the effect is for the elderly who are looking after these children. I know that it's early days yet, but do you have a sense of how some of these issues within SASSA are starting to affect the children who may be beneficiaries, secondary beneficiaries of some of the other grant monies?
So I think, again, that we will have to project what is going to be the larger context and the larger effect. But all in all, Treasury added conditions to SASSA's 2025-26 budget, and that was basically to tighten the means testing and reduce fraud, what they say. Now, the DG today presented to the Human Rights Commission, and I will reserve much of the comment in respect of the submission, but it's basically to verify whether every applicant's financial and employment status can be attested to before they process these applications. Now, if we look at what I've indicated, there's already been a decline in access. Mm. We've already sat with the Department of Home Affairs to address. There's also the missing and undocumented children, and that does not necessarily mean they are from another country.
Yes, of
it
course.
Means that they may be South Africans without their right documentation. Mm-hmm. We know that that number is very high. We know when we measure it against the numbers from the Department of Education of how many children are in schools without documents, the numbers are high. Now, SASSA must check every applicant's ID on the UIF databases through the Department of Employment and Labor. The UIF database then has to show whether that person is registered with UIF. It is a very technical and specific process. Whether that's going to basically demotivate our most vulnerable in communities and societies to look for 100 to 300 rand for travel, to delays in applications, whether that's going to have a massive effect will be very easily detectable in next year's severe acute malnutrition data. Yeah. we will be able to objectively determine whether the fraud risk scoring model is affecting the basic human rights of children and our most vulnerable in societies. And I sincerely hope that we have not, in the name of efficiency and austerity, offered up the lives of children, children with names, because of an approach that we have heard today did not face a children's rights impact assessment before rollout.
Sure.
But the commission will go back to the drawing board. We've heard from all the relevant stakeholders. We will assess now whether the steps towards redress that we have now undertaken is enough, or that there is still some room for us to put these things on the table and demand accountability.
Sure. I mean, I'm choking up, Dr. Carter, because while we are doing all these things and there have been critics, I know that's not you who've said it, but critics have said, no, social development is intentionally trying to pay fewer grants. These mechanisms that we are now calling fraud, risk scoring level mechanisms, they essentially are meant to decrease the number of people who are receiving grants. And while perhaps that's noble to make sure that there is no fraud and, you know, assess the risk levels, children are going hungry. And I don't know how, you know, how do we balance it out? How do we make sure that, yes, there are people who are held accountable, but then we do not deny access to those who desperately need it, as you've just seen?
No, it's definitely a conversation we need to bring home to the decision makers, that what we are saying is that in the name of efficiency, that the children's lives and the best interests of children weigh in fact the same as other monetary and fiscal decisions that they have to make, which we have absolute respect for, and we can imagine the difficulty there is with competing interests. But again, can I just boil down to what our Bill of Rights tells us, and Section 27(1)(c) and Section 28(1)(c) tells us what the Constitution says, and it asks us to provide social assistance and basic nutrition to children and food. This is not the Commission that says that. This is not the families on the ground. This is our most important document of our democracy that calls upon us to not only fulfill those rights, but also to progressively realize them. Now, we must ask ourselves, is this process, is this administrative implication going to stand the test of progressive realization, number one, of fulfilling the rights with the best interests of the child, number two, and of providing basic nutrition to children? And I would argue perhaps not. And we've made that argument in 2023's report. We're certainly making it still this month, last month when we hosted other departments as well. And perhaps moving forward, we will have to approach other fora as well and make that same argument, because we feel that these are not, in fact, a competing interest. It's the best interest of the child that has to prevail.
2021 to 2023 National Food and Nutrition Survey found that 29 children, and I think in the Eastern Cape that number is pretty high, of children under five are currently stunted. When we look at the money that they're currently receiving, 560 a month, even if every single child with all the means test got access to this money, it's still too low. What would it have to take for us to get that money to get to at least where it meets the needs of the child's nutrition?
So we were provided very clearly in 2020 through 2024 January, as well as today, a response from National Treasury to say there's simply not enough money. There's simply not enough money in the public purse to meet this need. Now, that for us is very concerning, because from even a projection perspective, and we've tried to even put that on the table during the initial subpoena process, is to say, let's speak about what that would cost the fiscus to stunt a learner now.
Sure.
Will that learner be able to actively participate in the economy in a few years' time? will that learner be able to access tertiary education and perhaps even plow back in the Eastern Cape into this developing beautiful province of ours? Will that maybe cost medical intervention? Will that cost so many other things to the fiscus? And is it not maybe an argument to be made to invest now, make sure that we do not have this almost 50% stunting rate, which is only going to touch the public purse in other ways later on? So these are the arguments that, and I would almost say value proposals that one would have to put on the table to say a preventative mechanism, and certainly one that the Department of Health echoed, a preventative mechanism now in the increase of the CSG grant will assist the country in the future. Now, one of the propositions that we have made and the proposals is that we also don't need to have a wholesale approach just yet. Because remember, the school nutritional program is a very, very successful mechanism also to provide children with at least one meal a day when they do enter the formal schooling environment. But Camille, what happens to the 0 to 5 year old cohort? They fall through the cracks. The children who go to school not only have perhaps access to the CSG grant, but they also get the meal at school. The 0 to 5 year olds do not get that. And that's why we've even asked Treasury to assist in conducting a study and take hands with the Department of Social Development and see whether a phased-in approach by providing an increase perhaps in the CSG grant for the 0 to 5 cohort can assist them until they reach this formalized process and schooling environment, whether they might be able to get a nutritious meal per day. But that has not been done. That study has not been done. And now that the ECD sector does, in fact, now fall under the Department of Education, we actually asked them, how far are you with the rollout of the school nutrition program to the ECD sector? And unfortunately, and with tears in my eyes, they said they are in pilot phase. In pilot phase. Now, you would know the lives of our kids, they are young for a very limited number of years. There's a very few a number of years that we have the privilege to positively impact their lives for a trajectory going forward and then, you know, participating and assisting this country moving forward. And if we are still in pilot years, after years of the ECD sector and programs have been handed back over to the Department of Education, how many children are going to fall through these pilot years in the cracks before we have a wholesale approach where children are not differentiated between, you know, 0 to 5 year olds and the ones in formal sector, but that all of them get the same benefits that this government has to offer?
What were some of the proposals that you put on the table? I mean, were there any immediate interventions that can be introduced in the meantime while Treasury still looks at the money, while, you know, Department of Basic Education is still on the pilot phase of integrating the early childhood development? What can be done immediately?
So one of the key recommendations that we made was for a state of disaster to be declared in the Eastern Cape. Why? Why did we make that big pronouncement? It is because each and every department, and we've just heard it here before, again today, we've heard it again during the subpoena process in September as well, each and every department has said we do simply not have the resources to cover all of the angles that we need to cover to prevent and address the malnutrition scourge. We simply don't. Now, what do we need to do or what mechanisms do we have to immediately address those issues? And that is why the commission said immediately declare a state of disaster. Now, why did we say that? We said that because the mandating legislation allows for an emergency situation or a disastrous situation to be declared when a community is unable to address the concerns that they have and the effects of these concerns themselves. Now, ours was to say, surely the communities are unable to address these scourges, because it was clear from the numbers that back then 116 children dying from severe acute malnutrition is no longer within the bounds of what the communities can do themselves. Now, that is why we made that recommendation. The Premier came to the subpoena hearings last month, and he said they did not declare that state of disaster. They, in fact, rather identified a command center where one would then collaborate with all of the different departments better in order to address this food security issue and child nutrition issue. We're sitting with the same numbers, unfortunately. Three years after. We sat with 116 in 2022. We're sitting with 107 in 2024. And we're looking at an increase in those numbers for the 2025 cycle. So we have to ask ourselves, is it not now time for us to immediately activate access to more funds to address this as an emergency, as a disaster? Or are we still going to wait for more data to prove that the lives of our children in rural provinces are at stake? What else must we bring to the table to show that this is a disaster?
So is this command center actually doing anything? And I don't want to undermine it, but you know, have you been able to assess what it has achieved then since it's been in place since 2022?
There has been movement. There's absolutely been movement. And we commend all the departments for the efforts that they are objectively able to provide to the Human Rights Commission. And they've done so. We have monitored. We have engaged. There's a food security and nutrition program and plan and strategy in the province, which wasn't there before our inquiry. There's been steps put in place. There are programs being rolled out. Ours is now to reflect, to ask whether they are in fact working. And our answer is, and we actually put that to the Premier, we put it to every department. When we look at the numbers, objective numbers of children still dying of severe acute malnutrition, can we say that this is working? And we cannot. Objectively so. The Department of Health provided us with the child deaths associated with severe acute malnutrition, and the numbers are not coming down. So that is enough information for us to say, back to the drawing board. What are we going to do different? And do we have time? Do we have time to not put all of this effort into this project? Because we cannot be saying and speaking the same things year after year. Like we said back then a month ago as well, children do not eat policy.
Yep.
Communities cannot eat the Constitution. Mm. Bill of Rights does not provide a roof over your head. It is time for tangible results, and back to the drawing board with all of us.
Sure. Yeah, it's a very difficult conversation, but Dr. Carter, thank you. Thank you for outlining it so succinctly for us. I really appreciate it. She is the Human Rights Commission Commissioner at the Eastern Cape Provincial Office. So this is Dr. Aileen Carter. It's not looking good, folks. And I think the more of us speak up, I think the better. I think we just simply cannot be sitting back while you have the kind of children, 29% of children under five who are stunted, and you now have already 107. This is now 2024. 107 children who have died of hunger. 127 children in the Eastern Cape alone. Over 500 children in 2024 died of hunger in this country under our watch. And the Human Rights Commission, as well as many, many other studies, are saying that that number looks like it's going to definitely increase if we review the 2025 stats. We simply cannot sit back and keep quiet.
Click kaya959.co.za.
This is how we do it.
To download the Point of View podcast on the air.